I did that once before, and we didn't get anything on the recordings.
Yeah.
I got sidetracked while I was putting all this stuff together. Let's see. That one's got to be on. We're on page number 7. Page number 7. We're talking about the omniscience of God. The omniscience of God. All right. Page number 7, and then the numeral 7. Okay? The numeral 7. Now, as you're finding that, I have a little something. What is this weekend? It's called what? St. Patrick's holiday, you know? Now, let's think about St. Patrick for a minute. He was a good old Baptist. I don't care what the Catholics did to him. He was a Baptist. And you can prove that by what he said and what he wrote and what happened and what he did. All right. Now, this is just a who's who of church history is what I'm telling. Now, he lived, they don't know exactly the dates, but this is roundabout. From about 350 A.D. to somewhere around 500. Okay? Now, it covers those years what he did. 350 to about 500, give or take a little bit. Some say that he was extremely old. He preached until he was very old. All right? Now, there was so much legend about Patrick that it just about covers up the real person. When he first started preaching in Ireland, now you have to go back a little bit before, he was a English Baptist is what he was. His father was a deacon in a Baptist church in England at this period of time. That was a stronghold. And who took the gospel to the English island, by the way? We're covering a little church history here before we get into the other, since this is St. Patrick's. Who took the gospel to England? Huh? Well, it came by way of Paul, but who were his disciples that he sent into the English area? England, Britain. Brother David, you remember who they were?
Oh, I was reading something else.
Who were they, David? You gave me that answer the other day. Who were the two disciples of Paul that went into England? Pudens
and Claudia.
Pudens and Claudia, and then their son Linus became a preacher. All right? Now, this is how the gospel got in there, and it was a great Baptist stronghold at that period of time, and they were fighting with the Catholic Church, what was becoming the Catholic Church. Well, Patrick was stolen, kidnapped by Irish pirates, and these Irish people were absolute just headhunters, cannibals, horrible type of people, you know. They took him off and they made a slave out of him, and he finally got away and went through France and got back into England. And then God impressed upon his heart to these savages that lived in Ireland that they needed the gospel. And he went back and he preached, and they say he established 365 churches. All right? That he baptized personally by immersion, he dipped 100,000 people. And he established deacons. Now, this is a missionary effort coming out of England into Ireland. All right? He went back as a missionary there. And that he established pastors and deacons in every one of those 365 churches. And, of course, there's all kinds of legends about him running all the snakes out of Ireland, all that kind of baloney, and leprechauns and everything you could think of. But all he was an old-time Baptist preacher that went there and did a whole lot of preaching. And that's who St. Patrick is. Later on, the Catholic Church fought him. He wrote his explanation or defense of himself against the Catholic Church, because they said he didn't have any right over there, and he said he had right. He was sent out by that church in England. He had all the right in the world. He didn't need their okay. Well, anyway, that's who St. Patrick was. Now you know who he was.
Why do they
celebrate it with pale green beer.
Well, that's a little paganism, brother. but they turned the Catholic Church canonized him later on because he became so famous in history. You'll find out there was a few of those old boys that they canonized that weren't quite Catholics; they were Baptists in history. All right.
Didn't you say St. Valentine was one of those?
Valentine was one of them also. Valentine was also another one. All right. Now, let's get back into our lesson since we talked a little bit about this. Now you can go and you can witness about St. Patrick, can't you? Huh? Next time they offer you a green beer, say, well, I don't drink beer. And neither did Patrick. All right. Page number... Not page number 8, it's 7, it's page number 8, isn't it?
Page 8.
All right. I've got to change all my page numbers because mine is a little different than yours. Page number 8 and down under number 7. Give scriptures, or actually it says, define omniscience. All right? Define omniscience. What does that mean? Come some two Latin words, omni and...
All knowing.
And seare.
Knows everything.
Now, anybody got a dollar bill
in
your pocket?
You
have a dollar bill in your pocket?
I don't think so.
I know I don't. Anybody got a dollar bill in your pocket? Go on the back side of dollar bill and tell me what's on there.
Well, this little pyramid.
Yeah.
With the eyes.
All right, the all-seeing eye.
I'll let you use that.
All right, careful. Can I keep? I might want to use this later.
Down payment on his book.
Right here is a pyramid with an eye on it. The all-seeing eye, and that represents, they say in history, the omniscience of God. Okay? I thought you'd like this. You don't see and tell.
Well,
there's some famous the Illuminati.
Yeah,
the Illuminati. There's all kinds of stuff about it. But what it actually means, what this word means, is the all-seeing eye. That's what omniscience means. Okay? The all-seeing eye. All right. Comes from omnis and seare. And we got a word science from this, omniscience. We got science. So what's the science supposed to do? Have truth in it. All right? So we have omniscience or all-knowing. Infinite knowledge that only is attributed to God. God inhabits eternity, doesn't he? And he knows all things. All right. Number 7. That was number 6 now. So you can write down what the definition of omniscience is. Now, number 7, give the scriptures which prove that God is omniscient. Now, we're going to go in here and we're going to discuss one scripture. So one of them is, be ready for something here, okay? I'm going to test your rules of interpretation. All right. Well, I am. You know, when you read the Bible, you ought to know what you're reading. Do you know that? Psalm 33:13 and verse 14. Psalm 33:13 and verse 14. Psalm 139:11 through verse 16. And Job 34 and verse 22. Proverbs 15 and verse 3. If you want to write these down. Daniel 2:19 through 22. 1 John 3:20. Okay, we're going to go back. I'm just giving you so you can write them down. Some of you can write that down, write it down, and then we're going to go back and look at every one of these. And then Psalm 147 and verse 5, and Job 37:16, and Acts 15:18, and of course John 1:1 also. So let's look at Psalm 33, verses 13 and 14 now. Who's got that? Have you got that, Brother Harold? You got a good translation there, don't you? All right.
The Lord looks from heaven.
Look it up.
The Lord looks from heaven. He sees all the sons of men from his dwelling place. He looks out on all the inhabitants of the earth.
All right. He looks up. He looks down from heaven. Now we can draw. I'm always losing that thing. Well,
There it is. Get it under your books.
All right. Here is God up in heaven, all right? Heaven includes everything, by the way. All right. Heaven. Now here's earth, right down here. And God says his throne is in heaven, and the earth is his footstool in different places. So here is God. And he looks down, and he sees everything in a microscopic way, everywhere, all at the same time. Okay? This is everything right here. So he knows what's going on everywhere, and here he is looking down. Read that again, Harold. Psalm 33, 13, and 14.
The Lord looks from heaven. He sees all the sons of men. From his dwelling place, he looks out on all the inhabitants of the earth.
All right. So there we see him. If you can just remember this little illustration, Brother Farrar gave that one to me years ago, and I think it works pretty good. It's for you to understand it. Psalm 139, verses 11 through 16. Psalm 139, 11 through 16. You got that, David?
Psalm 139?
Uh-huh. Many of you would ask me what is the most accurate translation in print of the Bible, and David has it in his hand right there. I loaned it to him, just brought it today. It's the Restoration of the Sacred Name of Scriptures. And kind of listen to what it says here. 139, 11 through 16, Brother David.
I say, surely darkness shall cover me, then night is the light about me. Even darkness will not conceal from me, but night like day will shine. So is the darkness as light. For thou didst possess thyself of my reins. Thou didst weave me together in the womb of my mother. I thank thee, in that fearfully was my being distinguished. Wonderful are thy works, and mine own soul is observing them intently. My substance was not hid from thee. When I was made in secret, when I was skillfully figured in the lower parts of the earth, mine unfinished substance thine eyes beheld, and in thy book all the parts thereof were written, the days they should be fashioned, while yet there was not one among them.
All right, isn't that beautiful? About the omniscience of God. Now, just take this picture and think about it for a while. Let's think about it. All right. Now, Job 34 and verse 22. Job 34 and verse 22. I want you to read this. These are all common verses, by the way, that are read to prove the omniscience of God. Omniscience. What's omniscience?
All-knowing.
All right. Good to see the classroom filling up. Good to have you here. All right. Job 34 and verse 22. Have you got that there, Brother
Wally?
34,
22.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yes.
There is no darkness, nor shadow of death, where the workers of iniquity may hide themselves.
All right. What's wrong with that verse? What's wrong with it?
You can get caught.
Huh?
You can get caught.
What is wrong with that verse? Do you think that's inspired of God? Who's speaking? Basic rules of interpretation. Basic rules of interpretation. Who's speaking? Who was he?
Job.
He was a Job retractor.
Job's buddy that turned into his enemy.
Yeah.
All right, now just think a minute. You know what? The Bible quotes the devil. You think the devil's inspired?
No.
Now, what he said in that verse is nothing wrong with it. But this is a man being. The Bible is quoting a man there. And what were they telling Job? That you're a bad dude. And God is punishing you because you are bad. And so now, just think about that for a while. Rules of interpretation. Who's speaking?
Well, who is speaking?
Elihu. Who's he speaking to?
He's speaking to Job.
Job. All right.
He's scolding him for
being
faithful to God.
Yeah. Trouble.
Yeah. He's scolding him and saying, you're a great sinner, Job. God has found you out. And so what the moral of the story here is, learn to read your Bible. All right? Learn. So really now, We could say that this is the scripture proving the omniscience of God, but really, in reality, should we use it as honest Bible scholars? No. All right. It's not that the Bible is not inspired, but that is a man's words written in the Word of God. All right? Don't get me wrong here.
Was that one of the references in the book?
That's one of the references in the book. So as we go here, we're going to understand this. What are the basic rules of interpretation?
Who's speaking?
I told you I was going to test you today.
Who's speaking?
Who's speaking? Elihu. Who's he speaking to?
Job.
What's the subject? He's scolding Job for being a sinner. Said, God has found you out. But you're a sinner.
But it's falsely accusing
him. It's falsely accusing him. So don't use that to base one of your sermons on proving the omniscience of God.
Job, but Job maintained his integrity.
Yes, Job maintained his integrity. So now you know, how many of you knew that? Did anybody know that in this verse? Yeah, thank you. All right.
Is that like Satan talking?
Well, yeah. Yeah, it was. Satan was working. He was working Job over through his friends and through his wife too, wasn't he? So be careful what you use to prove things. Now we know that. All right. Proverbs 15:1-3. All right. Teach you to be Bible students in here. Proverbs 15:1-3, talking about the omniscience of God. There's some beautiful verses in here. Proverbs. You got that, Brother Harold?
Proverbs 15:1-3. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. The tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable, but the mouth of fools spouts folly. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, watching the evil and the good. That's three.
All right. Now that's very good. Now what are these? What is the book of Proverbs?
Wise sayings.
Wise sayings. All right. That's what it is. Here we have, probably Solomon wrote this, and we have some wise sayings sent from God. So let's look at them. See, now he went down and gave us some basic information, didn't he? Basic information. And then in verse 3, what does it say again, Brother Harold?
The eyes of the Lord are in every place, watching the evil and the good.
All right. He sees the good and the evil, doesn't he? Both. He sees all of it. All right, Daniel, the second chapter, verses 19-22. Daniel, the second chapter. Let's look at the book of Daniel, talking about the omniscience of God. Who has that? Brother David, are you back there? Have you got that? No? All right. How about you, Sister Andy? You know?
Daniel 2.
Are you there, Luis?
No.
Nope. Who's there? Brother Billy.
I'm there.
Daniel 2:19-22.
I got it.
Oh, you got it, David? All right, read it out of that book there.
Daniel 2:19-22.
Yes.
Then unto Daniel, in a vision of the night, the secret was revealed. Whereupon Daniel blessed the Elohim of the heavens. Daniel responded and said, Let the name of Yahweh be blessed from age to age, and that wisdom and might to him belong. And he changeth times and seasons, removeth kings, and setteth up kings, giving wisdom to the wise, and knowledge to them who are skilled in understanding. He revealeth the deep things and the hidden, knoweth what is in the darkness, and light with him doth dwell.
All right. By the way, David was reading from the Restoration Sacred Name Bible. And what it does in the Old Testament, it brings out the real terms for the names of God in it.
I just want to ask, why are the two names mentioned in
yes.
the first?
In your translations, it's going to say God, but in that translation, it'll tell you what name of God. All right? So it names Elohim, and it names Jehovah. All right? Elohim and Jehovah. And read that last verse again, brother. Verse 22.
He revealeth the deep things and the hidden, knoweth what is in the darkness, and light with him doth dwell.
All right, now I'm going to go into a little bit different subject right here. We were talking about angels and all kinds of stuff. Okay, angels and spirits and demons. Now, When did God create? Now, this here's where you get this new earth business. It gets all messed up too, Brother Wally. When did God create angels?
In eternity past.
In eternity past. All right. Didn't create him in Genesis there in the first part of it there. Some of them, they've got all kinds of theories today. Okay. But in eternity past, God created angels. And what does the word angels mean?
Messengers.
Messengers. All right. And whose messengers were they?
God's
messengers. All right. God's messengers. Now, today we have something called guardian angels. Have you heard that term? And I believe they really were. All right. They're really guardian angels. And spirits also. Now, I think there's a difference between spirits and angels. I really do. Angels appear to man as what? As men. Spirits in the Bible sometimes talk through animals, sometimes indwell animals. Give me an example in the Old Testament there one time
Balaam's donkey.
Yeah, boy, you're pretty sharp. Right fast. Balaam's donkey. That spirit, a spirit from God, got in Balaam's donkey and preached to Balaam. The donkey preached to Balaam. All right? And told him something. And what did the donkey tell him?
An angel standing there.
Hey, dummy. and just think about what he said.
Now, good horse, and then he took him around.
He was over under in that thing. How many of you are horsemen? Nobody a horseman in this place, Brother Bill. You know what over and under mean? Wow, boy! You take those long reins or whip and whoop on both sides of that horse and get him warmed up and going in the right direction. Okay, that's what you call over and under. Old Balaam was doing the over and under on that donkey, beating the tar out of him. And the donkey says, what are you doing? Why are you beating the tar out of me? Have I been a good donkey all my life? Have I ever balked before? No. He started questioning this man and his intentions. Now, what was Balaam doing?
He didn't think about how the horse talked to him. But they finally realized that the angel had a fiery sword.
But what was he doing? What was Balaam doing?
Oh,
what
he was going to give money or secrets to the other people to help them.
Oh, yeah. He was going to go plot against God's people.
Right.
And evidently, this Balaam was a preacher. And in him dwelt the Spirit of God occasionally. They're sometimes ungodly creatures. Ungodly buzzards. All right? And he was. And he was going to thwart the purpose of God's people. And God sent an angel to stop him. A powerful angel. This was an angel. This angel didn't appear, but he was there. The angel was there because it specifies this as an angel. He hadn't appeared yet, but there he stood with a flaming sword. Like the angel that guarded the tree of life in the Garden of Eden. Okay? And a spirit came in and spoke through the donkey. And he says, you've been beating the tar out of me. All I'm trying to do is save your life, basically. And then God opened his eyes and he saw the flaming sword. He told the donkey, he said, if I had a sword, I'd run you through. Well, God had to stop that man, didn't he? So he used the spirit and he used an angel. So there we have an angel and we have a spirit, don't we? All right, a spirit and an angel. Now, in eternity past, there were spirits and angels created. Way back then. Way back when? In eternity. These angels. Now, the angels have been around for a long time, haven't they? Do you think that they ever saw every man born on the earth? How about spirits? How much do angels forget? And spirits, do you think they got a decrepit mind like ours? You used to have a pretty good IQ. It went someplace. It died out through a couple of strokes and chemo and all that kind of stuff. Worked me over.
This might be a different kind of question, but Where did the big giants come from? Like, how'd they get there? How'd Goliath be so huge?
Hold on just a minute. All right, just hold on. Let's go back to these spirits and angels for a minute. We covered that one before.
Oh, okay.
I have all these things.
Well, I have an idea, but I want to hear it too.
Okay. Angels and spirits have existed before man was ever created, haven't they?
Yes.
So they've been around here. Okay? Now, there's a seance in the Bible. You know that? One seance in the Bible is recorded.
King Saul.
All right. He went to the witch of Endor, and God overruled this situation. All right. Now, how much do angels and spirits remember? Do they have they come in probably contact with everybody that's been born on this earth? Huh? You think they might know their voices? You think they might know even their thoughts and everything? Angels are our ministering spirits. Our angels are ministers unto us, and their spirits out there doing the same thing. In the Gospels, Jesus went across the Sea of Galilee and came into the Gadarene area. And there was a Gadarene demoniac there. Maybe they say some of them say two of them. Okay. Now, what in the world was this demoniac doing there, Brother David? Beating himself up. They had tried to chain him up. They couldn't chain him up. They couldn't put handcuffs on him or broke all the handcuffs.
Living among the dead.
Because he was spiritually dead. All right. And what happened when Jesus came upon him?
He drove the spirit out.
The spirits addressed the King of Glory, first of all.
What have we to do with
him? Oh, Jesus, the Son of a God, what have you got to do with us? It's not time to throw us into the
abyss.
Into the abyss yet. Right over here, Revelation 27:9, and then the lake of fire, Revelation 20:10. That little chart help you understand things just a little bit. Not time. And they asked permission to go somewhere, didn't they?
To the swine. Let us have a herd of pigs.
Yeah, a herd of pigs out there, Wilbur's. All you that have seen Wilbur, my little Wilbur. Little Wilbur, about 800 pounds. They asked permission to go into these animals. And to a Jew, they were unclean animals. Those unclean animals had more sense than those Jews did at that time. Just think about this for a while.
They didn't allow him to abide in them.
They would not abide to live with those animals, with those spirits in them. So what did they do? What did the pigs do? Cast us out, and so they cast them out, and they said, and they went into the swine, and then where did the swine go?
Into the sea.
Into the Sea of Galilee. Now go back into the culture of the day. What did the rabbis say about the Sea of Galilee, the bottom of the Sea of Galilee? What did he say? That was the gates of hell. That was the gates of hell. The gates of the bottomless pit. They say the bottom. There was some real ravenous, terrible storms out there on the Sea of Galilee, and they say they were stirred up from the gates of hell, which were in the bottom of the Sea of Galilee. That's what they said. Now, if you were a Jew, standing around there right now, I'm not telling you that's the gates of hell, all right? I don't believe that, but that's what they believed. And the swine went out there and drowned themselves into the Sea of Galilee, which was a case of hell to them. Just think about that for a while. Now today, when they have these seances, and when they have these fortune tellers, if they are true, all right, Acts 16:16, Mantuomene, remember that word? Remember that one? Acts 16:16. We have a fortune teller there. In Acts 16:16. Think about that for a while. Talk about spirits. Acts 16:16. Let's go there and read that one just a little bit. You there, Brother Harold?
Acts 16:16.
Light near?
A second.
All right.
Okay, 16:16.
We're talking about omniscience, the omniscience of God. But I'm going to tell you something about spirits. They've been around for a long time. They're not omniscient. But they do. They have been around man all the time. Man's been on this earth. Acts 16, and go back probably up to verse 14 or something like that, brother.
Okay. And a woman named Lydia from the city of Thyatira, a seller of purple fabrics, a worshiper of God, was listening. And the Lord opened her heart to respond to the things spoken by Paul. And when she and her husband had been baptized, she urged us, saying, "If you have judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come into my house and stay." And she prevailed upon us. And it happened that as we were going to the place of prayer, a certain slave girl, being a spirit of divination...
Okay, hold on there. A certain slave girl, having the spirit of divination. What it says in Greek, how many of you know what it says in Greek? Anybody know that? Hebrew is Nahash.
Here it says the spirit of Python.
Pithona.
The snake.
Now the great snake. The spirit of Satan's group. A spirit controlled by Satan. Okay? Alright, this Pithona. That's what it is. Our word Python comes right out of that.
That's how the air out of you squeezes and squeezes and squeezes when you take your breath in.
Yep. But the Pithona. But what is it representing?
Satan.
Who spoke to Eve in the garden?
The snake.
Nahash. What's Nahash mean?
Serpent.
Deceiving serpent. All right, that's in Hebrew. All right. Now we have the Pithona. We have this great snake. The spirit of the snake. The spirit of divination. The word is mantua mane. Back in Kings, remember when we studied about Elijah and Ahab and old Jezebel up there? What were they doing? How did these prophets communicate with the dead?
By seance.
By doing exactly what this woman did in Acts 16 chapter. This is a descendant of that type of thing. In the great temples, the great Roman temples and Greek temples, they would have an old woman or an old man, elderly person, and they would hang them over a hole in the ground in a chair. Okay? And they would sit there and they said these vapors from the earth would come up and then they would get a message from the gods. Now, where is God, Goyle? In the heavens. Oh, boy. Now, they're getting a message from the gods from the vapors in the earth. All right.
That's a different God.
And this person, this old man or old woman now, she's strung out there. Give me another one. Out on a pole, and she's in a chair, sitting in a chair over this hole in the ground, and vapors are coming up. She's sitting up here, and she sits out there, and she gets wisdom, so called. How many of you ever heard of this? All right. And then she would talk to them in the language of the gods. And then, that same thing would happen. That's exactly what happened in Acts 16:16. Same thing happened back there in Kings. This trails all the way through time and history of religion. And then the priest would interpret to the person that made a request to find out where his lost daughter was, or son, or coins, or whatever it was. They would go there and they'd wait outside of this temple sometimes for weeks to get an audience. Then the priest would go in there and ask this one. And then he would come down and this priest, after he got this information, he would write down the answer to this person and take it out there. And there was great fanfare. They'd give him the answer. Of course, for lots of money.
Yeah.
That's what would take place. These spirits can tell you where something's lost. The police department in certain places are using these people today. I believe some of it is really for real, but it is not really from God.
Like remote viewing, you mean?
What?
Like remote viewing?
It's a psychic.
You know, but that's kind of remote viewing, too, though. They work in the military, and they try to tell people when the next place is going to be attacked. Or when
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Communication from person to person. One time, there's a lot of communication that we have lost, by the way, from the garden. There's a lot of communication that we have lost, mankind. One time, the Russians heard that we had developed certain people that could communicate with other people by mind from a distance. And so they were having trouble communicating with submarines and everything else, so they got somebody over there doing that. We weren't even doing it at all. This is false leak information. They started working on this thing. Be careful how you deal with the unknown, because the unknown is real. But it is really bad in many times. Your question. All right? B'nai Elohim. That's what you asked me. Genesis 6 and 1. B'nai Elohim. The sons of God. Who are they? I don't know. I really don't know. The book of Enoch can tell you a lot of things. We even got one here if you'd like that. We've got one on the website, discoverthemerd.com. This is kind of like a production room for our website called discoverthemerd.com, and then sermonaudio.dtw.com. I don't really know who those if those angels really married women and they had this monstrosity of Nephilim or not. I don't really know. But the rabbis believe that. The book of Enoch talked about it specifically, and I believe that the book of Enoch really goes back to those period of time. The book of Enoch that we have goes back to about 380 BC. That was the most copied book at the Dead Sea or the Qumran Caves. All right, just go read that and then make up your own mind, Brother Bill.
Book of the Bible in the 80 ages had a very good theory on that. It made a lot of sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the two tribes separated and one of them was sinful and one followed God, mm-hmm. and they met, the sons of God are the ones that he is saying that were
the lineage of the faith line.
You know, that mm-hmm. they were the saved ones. Mm-hmm. And the other was the ones that weren't.
Yeah.
And they're calling them the sons of God because they were Christians. Now, that's the only theory that I've ever heard.
Well, that's the common theory.
Yeah, I read several, but that's the theory that makes the most sense to me. Mm-hmm. Because angels can't reproduce is what it says. Mm-hmm. We're like the angels. We either marry or so. I know that's not true.
Well,
there's clothes of dark angel.
There's the other thing that there was a contamination. Noah was the only one that wasn't contaminated.
His family was the only one that wasn't contaminated. Now, that's the other theory, that only his line was not contaminated. And then when they went back into the Palestine, the promised land, they told them to kill all of them. And then there were giants in the land.
They
had six fingers and six toes and all this stuff. There's all kinds of theories out there. There's lots of stuff for you to study. Get the book of Enoch. You ever read the book of Enoch? Okay, that's good. And you know a little bit.
The fallen angels include Ten and Delph and Dwarf Man.
Mm-hmm.
So, think about it.
How come
the
book of Enoch is not in the Bible?
What?
How come it's not in the Bible?
Well, that has something to do with the Catholic Church. That's why it's not in the Bible. But it was not canonized in the Scripture. Matter of fact, at that period of time, they didn't even know where it was. They found one copy of it about 1000 A.D. It was taken into Egypt. And it was taken from the Qumran Caves. Somebody took it into Egypt, and they called it another file, and they found it later on. But then after they found the Dead Sea Scrolls, the most common book there was the Book of Enoch. All right. Did you know that?
The internet says that is the first full book of Enoch we had.
It goes back historically to about 380 BC, as far as we know those people lived. Okay. There are different occupations of the Qumrans, all right? But it goes back to about 380 BC. Now let's go on to the omniscience of God. All right. We just got off sidetrack just a little bit.
Chased a little rabbit trail.
Yeah, we ran that rabbit down. Okay, a little bit. Daniel, 1 John 3:20. 1 John. This is just jumping ahead on Wednesday night. They teach the Bible from Greek. All right. In this same classroom, 6 o'clock. What? 1 John 3:20. And we're going to study 1 John pretty soon. We're finishing the book of James right now. But then we're going to get into 1 John. 1 John 3:20. Have you got that there? Sometimes that's a real good translation, brother.
1 John 3:20.
Yeah.
Because of our own heart condemn, because of, if our own heart condemn us, greater is Yahweh than our heart, and perceiveth all things.
Mm-hmm. All right. Greater is Jehovah than our heart. That's what it's talking about. Jehovah. Jehovah God. John 1:1. You people ought to be able to quote that. NRK. Ein ho logos. Kai ho logos proston theon. Kai ho logos.
And the word.
Ein God. Logos. All right. All right. In beginning kept on being the word. He continued to be. He is everlasting. All right. And the second sentence in John 1:2 says, and the Jehovah, or the Word, kept on being an inseparable part of the Godhead. Proston theon. All right? Because He kept on being God. Simple as that. That He kept on being God. All right. John 1:1. Psalm 147:5. Psalm 147:5. I'm going to work you over here, David, so I want you to get that book. Hey, can you get that real fast? Psalm 147:5, because it's in the Old Testament, so it's going to give the names of God. That's why I want you to do that. And then Job 37:5. Now we're going to pass that one up.
Okay, Psalm 147:5.
Yeah.
Great is our Master and abounding in strength, and His knowledge cannot be expressed.
All right. We can't even explain the knowledge of God because it is infinite. All right? And Acts 15:18. Acts 15:18. Acts 15:18. What do you got there, Brother Harold?
Well, it's a continuation of a sentence from before.
Yeah.
Says the Lord, who makes these things known from of old.
All right. From ages past. All right. Way back. What?
Mine says from eternity past.
Uh-huh. From the ages, from eternity past. He makes these things known from eternity past because God inhabits eternity and space and time too. All right. God inhabits eternity and space and time. All right. Down to number 8. You got all those scriptures down there? Boy, we're out of time almost. Almost out of time. There is no beginning or ending for God. All time is eternal. Present. Everything is present with God. Present tense. All right? List the scriptures which show that God is everlasting or eternal. Psalm 90:2. Psalm 90:2, Isaiah 9:6, and the only reason why I'm telling you, so you can write them down and kind of get ahead of me just a little bit. Isaiah 40:28, Revelation 1:8, John 1:1 again. Put that one down there too. 1 Timothy 1:17, Jeremiah 10:10, and Revelation 22:13. Let's go back to Psalm 90:2. Psalm 90:2. Are you there, Brother Harold?
Before the mountains were born, or thou didst give birth to the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, thou art God.
Well, that's a beautiful word for creation there. There's one word for creation which means to beat out, or to form, or to birth. Where did everything come from?
God created.
God created all of it, and it all came from Him, didn't it? We talk about ex nihilo. How many of you have heard of that term? Out of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
God didn't create anything out of nothing. That's kind of a later, come Johnny, come lately deal. Everything that exists came out of God.
Anything made that was made.
It was made out of things unseen is where they came from. The unseen. We got all this stuff when we got these philosophers and things going on. We started talking about God making things ex nihilo, or out of nothing. Everything came out of God. Where did man come from?
God.
Tell me how God made man. Somebody tell me how God made man. Those that studied Hebrew with me. All right. How did God make man? Brother Bill.
He made him as he made the dust.
Like he made the dust of the ground. All right. Where did man come from? Directly. He's the primary creation of God. Where did he come from?
God.
The same elements. He came from the same elements that he made the dust of the ground, but to become dust because he knew that he would sin. That's prophetic. Beautiful.
And he breathed the breathings of life.
He breathed into him the breathings of lives. All right. God created Adam. God came right straight out of God. I mean, man came right straight out of God. That's where he came from. He's not a secondary creation of God. I've said that before. He didn't come from dirt. He came from the same elements that God created the dirt from to become dirt. Alright? From the same elements. And so man is a primary creation of God. He came right straight from God. Right straight from God's hand.
Then verse 3 here in Psalm 90, it says, turn back into dust. Actually, it doesn't turn back into dust.
It turns to dust.
Yes.
Yeah, turns to dust. Alright. Yes, brother.
Now, they use the term fiat creation, which means the same thing you said before.
Mm-hmm.
But then those Guthrie in his book says that it was created by God, and but he created it out of nothing. This is what we're being told. Does it make sense?
No, he created him out of that which is unseen. But all of it came from God. God, the Spirit, Ruah, Elohim, all right?
That would not be fiat or el nego, like you said?
Nope.
Here's what Guthrie says. He says that Paul positively thought that everything came out of God and that God thrust it out into being.
You read in those original languages. The original languages is what's going to straighten out your theology. Because that's the inspired Bible. The Old Testament in Hebrew and the New Testament in Greek. You want to know what the Word says? Get in those languages and thrash around. They don't major on that today. I'm probably one of the only doctor of Bible languages there is left, and I throw everything at you that I can throw at you.
Yeah, but there is this thing of God creating something. I can't create anything unless I use
something else.
That's already created. Yeah. I can sort of change
it. You can make a cabinet out of wood.
Yeah, but if God created it, did he use material or did he just create the material? And then in that case, it would be fiat.
All right. Everything that is in that you see in the world came from God.
Yes.
It came.
But where did he get the material?
It came from God. God is where the material is.
Well,
in the end, where is it all going to go back?
That's why he's a carpenter, you know. He had to put it all together, you know.
but that could be termed as fiat.
But God created all things from him. All things came into existence. That which is not seen, that which is seen came from that which is not seen. All right? When you start studying the creation, and that's what we're going to do here. But read that book. The creation of the heavens and the earth.
He has a great statement on what you're just talking about, and I'm trying to find it.
Anyway, let's go on a little bit further. We're
I'm just putting up these questions because they're there.
I know we have. You're going to run into that out there.
Yeah.
Right here, I'm going to try to give you what the Word says. I'm not going to argue with you over theories. I run into a guy the other day, and the man was full of arguments, wasn't he, Brother David?
Oh, yeah.
I never said one word, did I?
No.
Because it wasn't going to do me one bit of good. That man was set in his ways, and it was no sense in me fooling with him at all. I'll teach you forever, but I won't argue with you. I'll teach you what the Word says. I'm not a arguer, I'm a teacher. So I'm going to tell you what it says, and you put it together. All right? Where were we? Isaiah 9 and 6. Did we get there? Isaiah 9 and 6. That's the last one. Have you got that, Brother John?
Yes. For unto us a child is born, and to us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulder, and his name will be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace.
All right, isn't that beautiful? All right, Everlasting Father. You know how you can translate that also? The Father of Eternity. Colossians, the first chapter, what does it say about it? We translated the whole book of Colossians from Greek, didn't we? What does it say in Colossians about Jesus? That Jesus is Jehovah, and He created everything that you see. All right, He put it together. He formed it. He beat it out, as it says in Hebrew. All right, that's all you got. Can't have no more today. You come back next week, and I'll give you some more, okay?
Can I ask you a question? Have you heard of a guy named Charles H. Goldberg?